You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, we're talking the Utes over the Cougars, looking forward to Northern Illinois, and we talk with the famous Kurt Krathwart from Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Cameron, and we got Scott.
What's up?
And we don't have Ryan on this episode. He's out in Florida battling the hurricane. We might need to start a GoFundMe account for him to get home, because I have no idea how he's going to get him and his family home right now.
Ryan may never make it back onto another podcast. He may be done. We'll see how if he gets the best of Dorian, or if the winds of Dorian blow too strong. We'll see. Thoughts and prayers, Ryan. Thoughts and prayers.
So let's go ahead and kick off this episode looking at the Utah BYU game. Utah comes away 30-12. In a very dominating, impressive second half. Zach Moss, 29 carries, 170 yards, and a touchdown for the game. Moss looked phenomenal. After a season-ending injury, for him to come out like that, and I know we make fun of BYU, but their defense is not Idaho State. To do that against a BYU defense does deserve credit.
Well, and against a BYU D line that, you know, I wouldn't say they're maybe not as strong as they were a year ago, but with the loss of Kafusi, but still a strong group. And I mean, he looked on another level. He looked like the Heisman type, right? We've talked about it, that he has that potential this year, you know, and he comes right out of the gates. There, all this talk about, you know, the hand injury. Is he going to play? How many games is he going to miss? To come right out of the gates looking like he did, you know, even in his touches in the first half when the O-line was still kind of getting established and kind of finding their groove a little bit, he ran the ball really well. In 29 attempts, 187 yards, 6.4 yards per carry.
That's impressive.
And
it really is.
And the thing that is absolutely crazy about this, those last 9 minutes coming off of the thunderstorm break, BYU knew every ball was going to Zach Moss. There was no doubt. We were not going to throw the ball whatsoever. They knew that and they couldn't stop it. 9 minutes and they did not touch the ball offensively. I loved how, coming out of the break, ESPN's talking about the motivational tactics, the speeches that Kalani was giving to the offense, and especially to Zach Wilson, that this game was not over and they had a chance to come back, and he didn't even get back onto the field. That was sweet, 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 justice right there. So,
well, like what you said, Scott Moss was really on a different planet than everyone else on that field. You know,
you mean like a talent gap or something like that?
All the above. I think a lot of credit, though, does have to go to the offensive line. They, coming in the season, were a very big question mark, and I still think there is a question mark with them. Don't get me wrong. I don't think one game satisfies every single worry. They still have to get better, still have to gel. They will play defenses that do have a little bit more talent, a little bit.
That aren't G5.
Exactly. And so they still do have a ways to go. But what you wanted to see in a first game with this offensive line, I think they did it and exceeded it.
I'd almost argue differently on that, because historically, Utah comes out of the gate slow. The offensive line has come out of the gate slow when we've even had less question marks than this year. I mean, Jim Harding, since he's been here, he's proven year after year, the offensive line continually gets better and better and better as the season wears on. We've had seasons not too long ago, in just the last few years, where we've expected the O-line to be pretty good, and out of the gates have really struggled. And it's taken them sometimes 2, 3, 4 games to really kind of hit their stride. So for me, going into this game, with as many question marks as we had on this O-line, the lack of experience really overall, and these guys maybe not meshing. I mean, we're not even talking about Bam Bam Tunican getting onto the field. You know, he's technically one of these guys who's supposed to be a sure thing. And so he's not even on the field. We have all these question marks, and right out of the gates, we basically dominated that game. That offensive line dominated that game, especially more so in the second half. But to me, it was super impressive, and it gives me a lot of confidence in this offense that if they're performing that well out of the gates, and as we've seen in past years, Jim Harding's going to get these guys to continue to play at a higher and higher level each week.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they perform poorly or anything like that. And I know Jim Harding is the X factor when it comes to this offensive line. That was my one big thing I was harping on all offseason is, yes, there's a lot of question marks, but I had a lot of trust in Jim Harding because what he's done in the past. Talked to Nick Ford this offseason, and a lot of other position groups were getting a lot of attention. They took that as a slight, as an offensive line position group. You could kind of tell that in the BYU game, the way that they played, the way they executed. Again, I think they still have steps to go, but I think they're a lot further along than what I was expecting, and I think what a lot of Utah fans were expecting for game one.
Yeah, and that's the encouraging factor on this offense, because we know what Tyler Huntley can do. And we'll jump into Tyler here in just a minute. We know what Zach Moss can do. These tight ends are going to produce. The wide receivers are going to get more of an opportunity as the season goes on. They're going to produce. So really the unit offensively that was the question mark that really our success, I think, hinders on is this O-line. And that's, you know, that's not breaking news. You could say that for every team in the country. But the fact that they played this well out of the gates is huge for this offense, for Andy Ludwig, and what we're gonna see moving forward. Because what we saw at BYU is not necessarily what we're gonna see moving forward. Things are gonna differ quite a bit.
That was the most vanilla game plan they could have called, and it worked. And I think that was interesting.
And that was on the road,
yeah,
game one.
At BYU, a rivalry game, that they had the guts to go in with that kind of mentality.
I don't even think Ludwig flipped the page. I mean, I think he was still on page number one of that playbook.
So we talked about the offensive line, and yeah, they did a great job blocking for Moss. They also did a really good job for Huntley. Huntley didn't take a sack at all game, kept the pocket pretty clean for the most part. And again, BYU, not their strength, getting to the quarterback.
Well,
so that was good that they didn't have that as a strength.
And to me, that's going to be the biggest question mark of the offensive line moving forward, is I think these guys are going to be studs running the ball. My question is, how well are they going to perform protecting Huntley? Because he only had 16 attempts. That's not very many attempts. And out of those 16, 11, 12 of those, he was on the run. He was the pocket was moving. He was rolling out. That makes it a lot easier for an O-line to not give up a sack when that's happening. So they really were not put in a position where he was taking a five-step drop and sitting back there waiting for a route to develop. There wasn't all that much of that. So you're going to see that moving forward. So that to me would probably be the biggest question mark is can they hold up and can they equal in the pass protection what they're doing in the run game.
So talking about Huntley, what you said, Scott, 13 of 16, 106 yards. You know, I think he had a decent game, a clean game, if you want to call it that. No turnovers, no sacks. I think you have a senior quarterback, a senior leader in Huntley, who played within himself, didn't force things like the other quarterback that played that night, and really just he kept drives alive with that third down to Solomon Enos. Beautiful play all around. But Huntley, I think, took that next level where he played within himself and within the system and didn't do anything to hurt the offense.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't uber aggressive, but, you know, since Andy Ludwig has been brought in here, all he talks about is ball protection. And we know Whittingham, that's what he wants out of an offense, is an offense that protects the ball, does not turn it over, does not give short fields to the other team. So that, to me, is where I look at Tyler in that performance. He was not aggressive, but I think he was doing exactly what he was asked to do. That was the game plan, was protect the ball, don't take chances, don't put the team in a difficult position, and just give what the take what the offense essentially is giving you. And at that point, they weren't giving him anything. They were dropping eight guys. They were playing a very deep coverage to not allow anything past them. And at that point, if he gets too aggressive, he is going to start forcing things, and that gets him into trouble. So, you know, looking back, 13 of 16, those three incompletions, two of them hit Keithy right in the numbers, Simpkins right in the numbers, and the other one was kind of tipped a little flare to Fotheringham. Realistically, he threw the ball phenomenally.
And to that point, I think we really saw the effect of Ludwig that he's going to have on this team. Yes, it was vanilla. I think everyone knows that they're going to have more wrinkles. Winningham even said on his weekly press conference this week that they want to be a balanced team, have, you know, 50-50 with running the pass. But I think what we saw with Ludwig is an OC that's been calling plays for 30 years, or how many years he has, right? Compared to what Utah has had the last 2 years with a inexperienced OC that's still learning.
And a bug in his iPhone.
with that iPhone offense. But I really think that's going to help play dividends for this team moving forward, is it just seemed like everything flowed very nicely. And it wasn't like, okay, we're just going to pass the ball forever. Oh, we have to give the ball to Moses Herring, just do some little run play to get him his touch. It really seemed like there was a thought process when you saw that. And then when he figured out what was working with Moss, that's what he did. And it's simple, right? But the last 2 years, it took a long time for someone who's calling plays to figure out to give Moss the ball.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got a guy like Moss and you're getting, I mean, 6.4 yards per carry with him, it's ridiculous. You'd be foolish.
And 29 carries. That's what's so crazy.
Yeah,
is it six yards a carry if you have like three or four carries? But when you have almost 30 and that's what you're averaging, that is amazing.
Well, and he didn't break any big ones. It's not like he had a 50-yard run in there that skews that. He didn't have any of those. He just was, every time he was getting positive yardage, 6, 8, 10. I mean, he was phenomenal. Now, obviously, the fan base, right? The fan base wants passing. That's what's exciting. That looking, you know, as you watched that game, that was not the most exciting game to watch. But you've got to play to your strengths, and you've got to play with what the defense is how they're somewhat playing the game, and you've got to counter that. And they never adjusted. They never brought guys up into the box and forced us to throw the ball. So why change? There's no reason to. But moving forward, I can guarantee you, USC's not going to let you run the ball down their throats like that. Washington's not going to let you just run the ball for 6.4 yards per carry on average. They're going to put guys in the box. Obviously, they're more talented to begin with, but they're going to put guys in the box to eliminate that. And in most cases, if I'm a defensive coordinator, who are you going to have beat you? Zach Moss or Tyler Huntley?
You want Utah to throw.
You are going to force Tyler Huntley to beat you. So you fans need to realize, hey, just because what we saw against BYU does not mean we're only going to throw the ball 13 to 16 times per game and just run. Things are going to change. Other teams are going to dictate for us to throw the ball more and to be more aggressive in the passing game. So let's all relax a little bit in that regard. They were doing exactly what they needed to do. You know, Ludwig, I thought it was great. Like I said, not the most exciting game to watch, but that's what an experienced OC does. You can't stop it. I'm going to keep doing it until you stop it. And if you never do, I'm going to run 9 straight minutes off at the end of the game after eating orange slices and kibbles and bits, whatever they were eating inside the locker room, and just run it down their throats.
It is interesting that the teams pretty much had two halftimes, and it seemed like one team wearing blue didn't make any sort of adjustments, what we're talking about. So as we kind of take our focus now to the defense, Utah defense, was phenomenal as always. And I know that's one thing I want to ask Kurt about, cause he was at the game, watching it live, kind of get his thoughts on the defense. But Zach Wilson goes 21 of 33. He did have 208 yards, but two picks, both return for touchdowns. He was running for his life almost the whole game. And yes, he's elusive. That's one of his strengths, is running the ball. But Utah was creating havoc, and they weren't doing anything that special on defense, right? There wasn't a lot of different blitzes they were bringing. Pretty much Bradley and I and Max Tupai or Mika Tafua on the other end, they played the edges very well. They didn't go after him a ton. And so for them to do that with just their base defense and answer a lot of questions with this linebacking group, Devin Lloyd was amazing. He was a standout. Your breakout player, Scott, he came to play. Francis Bernard, a pick six.
You gotta feel good for that guy, man.
He gets the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week. I talked to him a week before kickoff, and he said, you know, he'd probably, you know, get a little emotional going back to that stadium. And for him to deliver and this team to deliver, Blackman playing a new position. I know I'm just rambling at this point, but that defense was outstanding.
They were. And now early on, they were pretty rusty, right? Especially tackling in that first half. You know, you could tell the scheme that Scally had it put in place, right? They were not over pursuing Zach Wilson. They were keeping him in front, and still on a number of occasions he was able to break free from one to two guys. He had that long, was a 35-yard run or so down inside the goal line. Or excuse me, down inside, I believe inside the 10-yard line, where he broke a number of tackles. And early on, you know, Kyle Whittingham's talked about a lot of the ones did not get a lot of live reps through fall camp. They wanted to keep people healthy. They didn't want to risk injuries. And you could kind of see that early on. Our tackling was not crisp, just pretty sloppy overall. But that really, as the game wore on, that tightened up, and that continued to get better and better. I thought the defensive line, even though they weren't dominant getting to Zach Wilson, partly because he got rid of the ball pretty quickly, they just do what they always do. I'll tell you what, let's focus for just a minute on those two pick sixes. Bradley and I, great jump, rushes around the end, kind of a speed rush, gets past Zach, and then doesn't give up, jumps back, and dives at his ankles. And that is the reason for the pick six. You know, that's not really talked about. Francis Bernard gets all the attention on that. But that doesn't happen without that effort from Bradley and I. And then you fast forward to the second half with that pick by Blackman. I'll tell you what, Tyreek Lewis played a heck of a game. And that play, if you got it on your TiVo, DVR, if you got a YouTube, it, go back and look at that play, because he's playing the underneath route, and he baited Zach Wilson into that pick. He stayed with him for a split second, and then he followed the other route, tipped that ball up. Really, he should have been able to catch it himself, but tips it up to Blackman, runs back. Beautiful play by Tariq Lewis. You know, and that's, you know, we hear from BYU fans constantly how they beat themselves. It's the mental errors. Ben is dying up on a hill that it's not a talent gap, right? It's mental errors. It's mistakes that seem to just happen, you know, every time they play Utah. But that's the difference. It's, you've got guys out there who know what their responsibilities are. They stay within those responsibilities, and then they perform. Utah outcoached BYU. They outperformed. They out-talented BYU. That game really was not as close as the score indicated at 30-12. Utah did not play lights out. They were horrific on special teams. Really rusty on both sides of the ball in that first half. And all they did is just run down BYU's throat in the second half with some missed field goals kicked in there and a missed PAT. They were not overly that impressive, and they dominated a very desperate and a very hungry BYU team. Don't tell me there's not a talent gap. Everyone sees it outside of the blue hairs. You know, and that all led to what? Mr. Rooney, what was that?
Nine times.
That's right, Mr. Rooney. Nine times.
Nine times? That's okay. We've kind of broke down this game, but let's really talk about this streak. Nine games is dominating.
Well, it ties the longest streak in the rivalry history. And next year, Utah will be at home with a chance to break it. So, nine times, I'm sorry. Yes, have a lot of those games been close? Yeah, they have been. And Utah hasn't played all that well in a good number of them, and they've still won them. And I'm sorry, this rivalry's dying. It's kind of passing BYU that this is their season, this is their Super Bowl, and they still, I mean, they're at home in their Super Bowl, and they're not even in the game. What does that tell you? Whittingham has this program on a completely different level than Satake can get his guys to at the moment. BYU's in a bad spot. You know, and I don't want to focus too much on BYU, but they're in a spot that they're in big trouble. And if they don't change things quick, they're going to be in a world of hurt. And Utah's not slowing down. Every year recruiting's getting better and Utah's getting more and more respect and they're doing more with it. So, you know, that's going to affect local recruiting and it's going to really make this gap even bigger than it already is.
Before we finish off our thoughts of the Utah BYU game, we can't end it without talking about special teams. Holy crap. That was
Gag
bad.
Me with a spoon.
And that was one thing that we've been talking about. I think every media member in the market has been talking about is the special teams with how poor it was in spring. We weren't able to see it at all in fall. So a lot of question marks. The crazy thing is when Strouch hit the 40-yard field goal or 41-yard field goal, I was like, okay, I'm feeling good about this.
Yeah.
And then he goes right out and misses the PAT.
I mean, that was a shame. That was shanky
and
very
first,
little.
I was like, oh, it was blocked. That was my first thought. I was like, oh, they blocked the PAT. And then on the replay, I was like, nope.
Even if they got upon it, the guy who got upon it should not be touching the ball because he's so far to the side. I mean, it was a bad kick. Then he follows it up with a really bad field goal, you know. And it wasn't just really the field goal kicking. Josh Nurse lets a ball bounce inside the 5-yard line, and then you know we get tackled inside the 10.
Just fair catch it and get to the 25.
Britton Covey fields a punt inside the 10. And he just didn't look 100% healthy. He didn't have that explosion to get away from that defender. And again, we're starting inside our 10-yard line again. So just some, I thought Ben Lennon had two punts, averaged 40.5 yards on the day for two kicks.
Not
so
bad.
You know, nothing astronomical, but that's solid. I mean, he didn't bring any cause for concern. I think he's going to be solid. The snaps look good. Hey, snaps, right? We struggled with those for part of last year. Those looked good so far. You know, and you kind of feel bad for this Andrew Strouch, who really didn't get much of an opportunity at UCLA, transferred here to get that opportunity. And after one, well, not even a full game, he's lost his job.
So this is me on my soapbox with this whole thing. So if you heard Whittingham's press conference this week, he talked about how one of the problems is that Andrew's a lefty, right? He kicks with his left foot. So the holder is everything is opposite from what they're used to. They had all a fall to get that down, and they couldn't get it down. Why is Utah's punter the holder? That's the other thing that drives me nuts.
Okay.
No offense to Ben Lennon. Like, no offense to him because he's a great punter. But why is he holding it? I never understand why Whittingham does that.
Well, I will say this. If you got a lefty kicker, everything's backwards. It's perfect to have an Australian as your holder because everything's backwards down in Australia. The toilet flushes the backwards. Everything they do is
the
a little...
The seasons are different.
Everything's a little backwards. So you'd think he would thrive in that position, but... Yeah, you know, I honestly would love to have a quarterback as a holder, you know, get Jason Shelley out there. Now, I will say Whittingham, and I'll have to go back and look at this, Whittingham did say that they switched holders, but I didn't notice who they switched to.
Well, he said they have a left holder and a right holder.
So who's the right holder?
Lennon was holding it for both, and it was just getting too hard, like muscle memory, to keep switching it. So they just made him for the left, and then I didn't see who was holding on the right.
Whoever held on the right, good job.
So we'll see.
And we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
So a true freshman, Redding, a walk-on from back east, will be doing field goals. Andrew will still be doing kickoffs.
And he did perform well at those. I mean, he was kicking for the most part into the end zone, or at least right to the goal line. He seems to have a good strong leg, but a little erratic on those field goals. I'm interested to kind of see how this plays out, because if you remember how Matt Gay was not coming out of fall camp, was not your starter 2 years ago. It was that Johnston kid from Brighton. He was Bingham, yeah, one of those B schools. And he wins the job in fall camp, comes out, shanks his, I believe he only shanked one. He didn't even shank it. I think it just hit the upright.
It did.
I mean, it was a good kick. And out he went, and in came Mr. Gay, and never relinquished that spot. So, hey, maybe, just maybe, this will have a similar result where Redding can come in after not winning the job and just seal it down.
I think he is wearing Matt Gay's number. All right, so that'll kind of do it for our overall thoughts of the game. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the game. You can always tweet us at Utah Man Podcast. And it does look like we have Kurt Kratthorpe on the phone. But before we bring him in, we'll let you know that that interview is brought to you by Farmers Insurance for protecting your home, vehicle, and family. Look to Farmers Insurance. You can call Scott Omer at 801-307-4946. Check him out on Facebook and Twitter at Scott_Omer8. Alrighty, so we have probably the biggest guest we have ever had on the show. The one and only Kurt Kratthorpe from the Salt Lake Tribune. Kurt, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I appreciate you reading the introduction exactly how I wrote it.
We landed the big fish.
Oh, Kurt, you're a great guy. We really appreciate you taking time out of your evening with your family, because I know you spend all day talking sports, writing about sports, especially Utah. So I'm sure what you want to do in your evening when you're at home with your family is talk to a bunch of yahoos like us. So really appreciate it. I'm definitely going to have to buy you a cheeseburger sometime for doing it.
I'll accept that, but there's no apologizing necessary, because this is the only subject I know anything about. So I'm willing to talk about it, believe me.
So as we look at this Utah team, especially during that BYU game, and obviously you were there, you're covering the team day in and day out. How impressed were you with that defensive performance by Utah against BYU?
Yeah, I think the defense actually played a little better than I expected, if that's possible. I'm a little bit too reliant on history. It's both my strength and my weakness as a writer. In that, and I thought back to last year when BYU scored 27 points against Utah. I thought Zach Wilson looked really good, and so I was expecting BYU to put up 20 plus points in this game. And so, based on that, I thought Utah's defense looked a little better than I expected. I know we have high standards for that group, but I just thought they were really impressive.
Coming out of the gates, Utah historically has not come out, especially in game ones, all that strong. Obviously, in this game, they played a pretty conservative game plan offensively. Yet, you know, still didn't set the world on fire, but played well enough to create a big enough gap and just show the difference between the programs talent wise. What are your thoughts? There's a lot of talk right now going on about the talent gap between BYU and Utah. Is that something that is that as big as everyone's talking it out to be, or at least Ute fans are talking it out to be?
I think it is a significant gap, and I base that on the NFL draft. I think that's kind of the one tangible gauge that we have is how many youths get drafted compared to the Cougars every year. And that's undeniable. But the other part of it is that in the rivalry game or any rivalry game, that the talent gap tends to get shrunk. In other words, there's so many other variables that come into play that the talent in and of itself isn't always reflected. And again, with my focus on history, I just couldn't get over the notion that so many of the past games of this decade have been closed. And so that's why I wasn't totally surprised when it was only 9-6 at halftime. Arguably, and statistically, factually, BYU had outplayed Utah to that point. And so the part that really impressed me is just how Utah took control in the second half, starting with that first drive of the third quarter. And then the punctuation of the whole thing was the 9-minute drive to end the game. And at that point, you're saying, okay, if this game lasts another quarter, Utah would have won by 2 more touchdowns. And so the talent gap did definitely come into play over the course of the game, but it took 60 minutes for that to truly be reflected, I thought.
And so, Kurt, you talk about, you know, that 9-minute drive and Utah in that second half really kind of taking over the game. I think a large part of that was Zach Moss, right? And he was the star of the game, really carried that Utah offense. The passing game, it really was up and down through the game. I think Huntley was 13 of 16, something around those lines. A couple drop passes by the wide receivers and tight ends. But outside of Zach Moss, we'll take him completely out of the equation. Are you concerned what you saw last Thursday with this Utah offense?
Yeah, I don't know if concerned is the right word, but definitely I expect more from them. I do think they have the capability of being a legitimate passing team, especially because of Zach Moss. That's the thing that I keep going back to, is that when you have a weapon like that, defenses have to be so preoccupied with him that it just seems logical to me that there's got to be some openings downfield. And I think the Utes have to take advantage of that. And to me, they've got to mix in a few more passes on first and 10. I think that's down when normally you would expect Utah to run the ball. So in my mind, therefore, it becomes easier to pass. And so there's a theory, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on in the minds of the offensive staff. Maybe they were being ultra conservative in this game. Maybe they're just totally saving everything for USC in the Pac-12 opener, and all the potential wrinkles will come out at that point and beyond. But I do think they have to mix it up. It's kind of a funny, famous story now about how I sent this tweet after the first quarter that it was apparent to me that Utah's offensive line wasn't good enough that they could just line up and run the ball. And of course, when they did run the ball for about 200 yards in the second half, people were spent the entire Labor Day weekend reminding me of that.
It happens to all of us.
Tweet that didn't age well.
Happens to all of us.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think they've got to mix in some first down passing. And I just think you can be really effective because you run with Moss and defenses creep up to try to stop him. I just think it has to make life easier for the wide receiver. So whether that happens this week against Northern Illinois or again, whether Andy Luck would save it for USC, I do think that has to be part of the equation at some point.
So the offensive defense, you know, obviously there's still some concerns offensively. Defense, we know what we have in a Kyle Whittingham program. But this year, special teams, at least in game one, did not look all that impressive. Struggles really in all phases, from kick returns to PATs, field goals, where special teams really has been one of their biggest strengths over this last decade. Is that how big of a concern should that be for Ute fans when all the attention's on Utah? There's a national recognition of winning the Pac-12, potentially getting to even making the playoff. How big is it that our kicking game is so questionable?
Yeah, I think it has to be a concern at this point because history shows, you look at 08 in particular, when the Utes were undefeated, Louis Stoller won about three games that year with his kicking. And so it's just inevitable that some games this year are going to come down to making a key field goal. Maybe it's not literally the last second, but it's going to be some key points in the game where you need those 3 points. And so, yeah, we talked about kind of the way I've been framing it since March is that the biggest complaint about Utah's offense over the last 10 years has been settling for too many field goals. But what happens if they start missing those field goals? And you actually saw that happen against BYU when they got down inside the 10-yard line and couldn't convert the little field goal. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting. Jaden Redding will be doing the field goal kicking. The irony of Andrew Strau's game and losing his job as the field goal and extra point guy is that he was probably the best performer on special teams in terms of just the kicking off part of it. He either put the ball in the end zone or put it like right at the goal line, and Harris King was able to get down there and stop him around the 20-yard line. So looking at the snapshot of that phase of his job, he was outstanding. But again, to miss an extra point, I'm just trying to calculate it. I went back, and I think the last extra point Utah missed was Andy Phillips against Colorado in his sophomore year of 2014. So Phillips for the next 2 years and Matt Gay for the next 2 years made every extra point. So you do totally take that for granted. So when that didn't happen after Francis Bernard's touchdown at BYU, it was pretty shocking. That literally made me pay attention to the extra points the rest of the night. And as it happened, Redding picked the last two and earned that part of the job. But it'll be interesting to watch going forward. But yeah, we've been kind of ran out of things to talk about with the Utes, and so we kept circling back to offensive line and kicking. And I think offensive line pretty much answered the questions about itself last Thursday, but
definitely
kicking didn't.
Definitely what we saw in spring, right, was the offensive line and the kickers. And then we didn't see anything in the fall, and they got two new kickers. And so, yeah, I mean, it made sense. That's kind of what we were talking about. And then in game one, both of those, for different reasons, kind of stood out to people. We're talking to Kurt Cragthorpe from the Salt Lake Tribune. Now, Kurt, I saw you put out a tweet the other day. I'm assuming you're going to be running with this story. So if I don't want you to give up anything that you can't, keep your story, the integrity of it. But what do you think the impact is going to be on this Utah team, whether the players, the coaches, the fans, with an 11 o'clock kickoff this Saturday?
Yeah, and it's certainly something we can talk about, because it really is interesting. I just by sending out a tweet, I got like 75 responses from Ute fans, and was absolutely amazing that that's almost exactly divided about people that are kind of embracing this idea and fans that that's only last night games. But what's in the other further interesting part is that every group has different reasons for liking or disliking it. A lot of the people that don't like the morning games, for example, bring up the fact that they're watching the kids play football or soccer and kind of disrupts the whole family dynamic that way. But in terms of the team, I go back to the idea team practiced it for 2 weeks of August at 9 o'clock in the morning. So it seems to me that they'll adjust probably better than the fans will in a lot of cases.
Kurt, you put out a story this week about the enhanced game day experience that's going to be taking place at Rice-Eccles Stadium. A great article with some new ideas that the new AD and his team have brought in, and some changes that they're going to be doing to try and create an even better atmosphere at Rice-Eccles Stadium, and with a desire to have that be the best place to watch a Utah football game versus television, which is becoming tougher and tougher in today's world. So talk a little bit about what Utah is going to be doing and how the potential impact that has on season ticket holders and anybody that's going to be attending these games.
Yeah, I'll start with kind of the overarching sense of it. And I give Utah Athletics a lot of credit because all they have to do now is hold up a sign on the south saying when kickoff is and open the gates and people will come.
It's true. It's true.
They really don't have to market this football product anymore with the 57 consecutive sellouts and a 3,000 person waiting list for season tickets. So they could just take this summer off if they wanted to in terms of game presentation and marketing things. So to their credit, they know that this isn't going to last forever, partly because they're going to have 5,000 more seats to fill in 2021. And also just because, like you said, in summarizing the story, that it's so easy to sit where I'm sitting right now in front of a television and watch games from 10 a.m. to midnight every Saturday and not fight the traffic and be uncomfortable with the weather, whether it's too hot or too cold and all of those things. So some of the specific things they're going to do are kind of interesting. It'll be interesting. Like I said in the story, it's kind of the most difficult test case you could have to start out with of trying to get people in the seats earlier and get them revved up when it's the first 11 o'clock game that most fans have experienced. I actually looked it up, and I remember going to this game in 1983 when Utah played Wyoming at 10:30 in the morning. It was a special PBS game, and the Utes actually scored something like 48 points in the first half. So I'm going to write another story this week saying that the current U team can't use the early start as an excuse because the 83 Utes scored 69 points against Wyoming and starting at 10:30 in the morning. But I do think it's an adjustment for fans. And again, going back to the idea of my little unscientific survey, a lot of the fans who are against the morning start point to the fact that the night atmosphere at Rice Eccles is so electric. And it is a fact that the Utes have a better winning percentage in night games in the Pac-12 era at home. And so, again, circling back, that's what the athletic administration is trying to do is to try to generate more of that revved up atmosphere, whether it's in the morning or afternoon, and they're going to try to get people in the seats earlier, which again is going to be difficult at 11. They're going to have the cannon blast 45 minutes before kickoff and try to alert people in the tailgating that it's time to think about coming into the stadium. And so that'll be interesting. And then I'm curious how this is exactly going to work. There's supposedly some new ritual they're going to do after a first down by the offense and have people stand and cheer and point or something, and we'll see how that plays out. So again, it's the pressure's on the Ute offense to get some first downs early in the game, and we'll find out how this works.
So this Saturday, Utah takes on Northern Illinois. What you're saying, Kurt, it's 11 o'clock kickoff. I know Scott and I, we're probably going to get up around 7, do you think, Scott?
For tailgating?
For tailgating, something like that. Kurt, you're probably going to get up around 5 to get up there to start covering the game. But what do you kind of expect out of this game on Saturday? And do you have a prediction on how you think Utah will perform against Northern Illinois?
Yeah, I just don't vividly remember the game back at NIU last September, basically 52 weeks ago. And the one funny story I always tell is there were 16,000 people at the game, and the stadium only holds like 24,000. It was literally the smallest stadium the Utes had played in something like 50 years. My nephew went to this nearby college called Wheaton, about 20 minutes from NIU, and it was a Division III school. So when he and his friends wanted to go to a big time game, they would go to Northern Illinois. So that was my way of trying to illustrate to people that everything in life is relative. So what seemed like a small potatoes environment for Utah was actually a big deal to some people. But anyway, I just remember feeling how tense it was when it was the Utes were ahead 10-6 and they had a chance to run out the clock on offense and couldn't do it. Had to punt back to NIU with about, again, 2 minutes left. And you're thinking, okay, is it possible Utah's going to lose this game? And lo and behold, Chase Hansen, I think it was on first down, intercepted the pass and restarted 40 yards for the clinching touchdown. But so again, my frame of reference is always what's happened in recent history. And so based on that, I don't think that people should be saying, okay, the next 2 weeks are going to be totally easy, because I think what's happening is people are saying, okay, Northern Illinois is just like Idaho State. And that's just not true. Northern Illinois is more like BYU than they're like Idaho State. Now, having said all that, I think the Utes did learn something last year about you have to take a group of five team seriously. And Kyle Whittingham has just been so adamant, this week about being tired of talking about the BYU game and totally shifting the focus to NIU. But so I think he's very, and the fact that, again, the Utes had that experience of what happens when you don't take a team seriously enough last year. So to me, it all adds up to it should be what we thought would happen last year, which was a comfortable Utah victory. So I'm looking at something like, 35-14 this week.
So you can always read Kirk Trackthorpe at the Salt Lake Tribune. Kirk, before we let you go, I on a personal level, just thanks again for joining us tonight. You and I have gotten to know each other a little bit in practices and games and whatnot, and you're always there to lend a helping hand when I've had questions along the way, trying to figure out what I'm kind of doing. So just always appreciate your guidance and your advice. You're a good guy. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Yeah, my handle is @TribBurt. So I distinctly remember when I took over the Ute beat in July of 2018 and just sent it out there that I was going to be covering Utah. And people just responded great. And I joked about getting some negative feedback this past weekend, but it was mostly striking to me because of the fact that I've been treated so well by Ute fans on Twitter over the last 15 months. So I've really enjoyed the interaction, and it's just been a great experience being around you guys covering the team. And I just look forward to a really memorable 2019 season.
Awesome. Kirk, hey, thanks so much, buddy.
Glad to do it.
Man, it's always great to have people that cover the Utes day every single day, and having Kirk Trackthorpe jump on with us. Great interview. I really liked his thought about on the offensive side, throwing it on first down more to kind of keep the defensive guessing. I thought it was a really good, you know, thought that I've never even considered or thought about with this offense. But I really want to dive into the column he wrote about the fan experience coming up this season. And one thing he mentioned, doing something with the first down. I worry when things are forced. Sort of like the Utah chant before the game. I'm not
what are you talking
fan.
About? Those always turned out so well.
It always seems like the atmosphere, traditions are better when it's at a grassroots level and it just comes about. I don't like forced things at games.
All right, you fans, let's all clap in rhythmically now.
There was a reason why those fourth quarter drums had to go away.
Well, there's still a number of things that should have gone away. They've kind of forced the UTAH as they go around the stadium, which is cool, but the way they do it, it just has not worked. The drums, I'll tell you what, I'm a drum believer. The Big Thunder drum should still be here. You Ute fans who just mocked it endlessly, you ruined it.
I was one of them.
Now, I will say, it needed some tweaking, but that could have been a cool tradition. Now it's gone, and we're left with, like, watching Whittingham yell at the players in the locker room as we start the fourth quarter. But I will say this, you know, I think it's fair we give Mike Runge a moment of silence. Okay. And we're back. And, you know, Runge's done well for a number of years, but, you know, I think, as the article alludes, they want to bring a little bit more energy. This Tim Hughes, I think, is definitely going to bring that. But to your point, Cam, I think you can't go the way of the basketball in-house announcer. You know, I don't want to hear, you know, it's a first down from, what's the equivalent of the Michael Jordan takeoff line? From the Barry Sanders. I don't even know. I got nothing. But we don't need any of that nonsense. Just sure, bring some energy. I hope, I'm excited. I'm going to hold off judgment. I think this could work out, but I'm interested to see how this first down cheers get to go.
It'll be interesting. If you haven't read the article, go check it out. It's on sltrib.com. One thing I do like, I'm not all negative over here. I guess they're going to have microphones around the band. They did that a couple games last year.
Yeah, that
I
helped.
Like it.
That helped.
I like it, especially for the people in the north end zone.
The best, you know, the best area.
So it will be interesting. And really, you can start to see Mark Harlan really put his fingerprints all over the athletic department. Seems like there's changes every so often, and we'll see.
And you know, some of these changes may strike out, and you know, you fans don't get on Twitter and freaking just lambast the AD over these. They're trying stuff. Not everything's gonna stick. Some of them may turn out to be pretty cool, and we may start doing them, and it'll be awesome. Add to the environments, and some may flame out and be awful. But at least they're trying to do some things. And as a fan base, you know, everybody's got to show up. Now, I don't know if I don't think they've done a very good job marketing that this is going to be a red out. So if you're going to the game Saturday at 11 a.m., wear red because it's a red out. And we will mock you endlessly if you don't wear red.
Guarantee you, Ryan will be one of the fans in white.
He'll be white or black.
Or gray.
Oh, no. Nobody's allowed any
That's what
gray.
They need to do is a gray nope. out.
Actually, I've got confirmation security is not allowing anybody into the building that's wearing gray. So we're good on that front. But yeah, some of these may strike out and not be all that effective, and we may laugh at. But I like what Harlan and the staff is doing here. They're not resting on their laurels. Utah is one of the best and most exciting places to watch a college football game. 57 straight sellouts, and they're trying to make it even better. Obviously, this is partly in preparation for, you know, a couple years down the road when the capacity is a little bit greater. That south end zone's filled in, but I think this will be good. Let's get some new traditions started. There's just too many weird, drunk, unrhythmic clappers out there amongst the fan base. I think you're going to make some of these difficult, but we'll do it. We'll try it. We'll see what happens with Mr. Tim Hughes leading the energy from the press box.
All right, as we go into the Northern Illinois game, wants to know that we're brought to you by DoubleTree Suites by Hilton in Salt Lake City. They're located at 110 West, 600 South. Give them a call at 801-359-7800, or you can always check them out at hilton.com. So Utah hosts the Huskies of Northern Illinois. Kirk talked about it already, but last year's game, 17-6, an ugly game. And I really think Northern Illinois wants it to be an ugly game. Their offense is not that good. They're one of the worst offenses a year ago. Yes, they beat up on the Little Sisters of the Poor in Illinois State, but a lot of that was because of their defense, because their defense is really good, a really outstanding defense. They do bring a quarterback over.
From Cal.
Ross Browers, who played at Cal, who played at a bad offense at Cal, and he's at a bad offensive again.
Yeah, so we're good. We're good here. I mean, Ross Bowers was awful at Cal, and now he transfers to Northern Illinois, where he's got even less talent around him. I think we're going to be okay. I mean, he was all right last game, 20 of 33, 299 yards, you know, and two TDs, one pick. So good numbers, nothing great against their opponent, but this is not the Northern Illinois team that we faced last year.
No, and one of the biggest reasons is Sutton Smith. He led the NCAA in sacks. He's no longer there. And I bet Winningham and especially Andy Ludwig and Harding are glad he's not there. They don't have to account for him. But they're still good defensively, and that's where they're going to hang their hat up. So I think they want it to be an ugly game like it was last year. The flip side of that is Utah going to allow it to be ugly like they did last year, or can Utah rise above that and play the way that they're supposed to play?
Yeah, and I mean, and Kurt mentioned this. This is not an Idaho State team, right? These guys are better. They are a higher level. They're a better football team than what you're going to see in week three at Rice-Eccles. But this is, again, Utah's came out today. Utah's number 13 in the polls. Leapfrogged Washington. So that's, so eat it. Eat it, Mr. Peterson. We're on top now. Get used to it. Yeah, Utah's got to go out and they got to dominate. This has got to be you cannot have a performance like you did last year at Northern Illinois and you win because of a late pick six.
But can a Winningham team do that?
Yeah, of course.
And I know this was a topic we saw on Twitter today. Utah's favored what? By 22.5.
Yeah.
Utah has to get above that because they need style points.
Well, sure they need style points.
But can a Kyle Winningham team do that? Because Kyle doesn't care about that stuff. He just wants the win.
This defense, if Utah is focused and ready to play, I don't see Northern Illinois making double digits in points. And you're telling me with what we have offensively, and again, you're not going to see double reverses. You're not going to see them really opening up the playbook and going deep into it. They're still going to be a very vanilla team. They're going to see what, obviously, the weaknesses of Northern Illinois, and they're going to exploit those, and that's going to be the game plan. But outside of that, you're still going to see a lot through the running game, and you're going to probably see a little bit more in the passing game, but this is not, we're not going to be an air raid by any means. So with that said, Utah should run away with this by halftime. I honestly mean that. I'm not trying to be a Ute homer. I'm trying to be realistic in this. But this is a team where the game should be over at halftime. With as much talent as Utah has offensively and defensively, it should not be a game.
To that point, is that's what a lot of people say a lot of times with these games.
Oh, for sure.
And it seems that they're closer than what they need to be.
Well,
I don't think it's going to be, like, I'm not trying to come here and say it'll be a field goal difference in the game, but I don't know if I'm ready to say it's going to be done by halftime, and I don't know if they cover the spread.
Well, for starters, we're not traveling across the country. We're not playing in front of a high school fan base and stadium like we did last year. It's at home. Utah knows what's on the table. They know what's in front of them and what's at stake. And could you, right? In years past, we've had some hangovers after the BYU game. Could we have some of that? Sure. But even with that, this game should be light years ahead of them. And I just don't anticipate it being really all that close.
You know, that's a good point you bring up, is the hangover from the BYU game. I don't expect that because the guys didn't really seem like they were celebrating that much again, that win against BYU.
Well, it's because BYU so poo-poo.
I mean, yeah, they don't get me wrong. They sang the fight song in the locker room. They went crazy about that. But in their press conference interviews, they just seemed like it was just another game for them, just another win for them.
And well, at this point, it is.
And I know it's always a very good point. But I know it's always an emotional game with the rivalry game. But I wonder with this 9-game winning streak, if that emotion's kind of a little tempered off a little bit.
I think so. I think you'll see that. Plus, you've got a few extra days that these guys have had off since the football game. You know, they're going to have, it's going to be over a week since they played last. A lot of these guys, let's be honest, every wide receiver on this team is going to be hungry to go out and play. Why? Because they didn't do a whole lot in game number one. They're going to want their chances. They're going to want their opportunities, and they want to start putting up stats. So those guys are going to come play. And you got a lot of guys. You got Devin Brumfield. You got Devontae Henry Cole. Those guys want carries. They want to show Kyle Winningham. They want to show Andy Ludwig what they can do. You've got, you know, and hopefully, hopefully Moss can break a few big ones early on, get some yardage in, and then hit the sideline and let some of these young guys come in that are hungry to play. They don't care that they're playing Northern Illinois. They just want to put up stats. So you're gonna get guys that want to come out and perform and play at a high level and earn some reps for later on in the season. That's where I think Utah pulls away, and really I don't see this one being all that close.
All right, so we're going to keep the tradition alive, what we do during football season on the show. We pick three Pac-12 games, and we give you who we think will win. And joining us on the phone, all the way from Hurricane Dorian, whatever its name is, Ryan from the Utah Man Podcast. Ryan, can you hear us?
It's a little windy down here, but I'm glad you invited me to join on.
Straight from the eye of the storm.
All I have to say, Ryan, is good luck trying to fly home tomorrow. So the first game,
kidding.
The first game we're going with is San Diego at UCLA. UCLA is favored right now by a touchdown, 7.5 points. I'll go first this week. I think I'm going to go with the Aztecs. I really don't like what Chip Kelly has right now. I think they're a few years away from really building something there. So I'm going to go with San Diego.
I'll tell you, so Vegas thinks that UCLA will win by 7. How bad is San Diego State? So, I don't know, man. I don't think UCLA, they did not look good whatsoever in that first game the other night. So, tough one, but I'm gonna go with them. You got to go back the pack. I don't hate UCLA, so I'll back the pack.
Scott's going with the 8-clap. Ryan, who do you got, Aztecs or the Bruins?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Scott on this one. I just think, I mean, UCLA did not look good in their opener, but they've got to bounce back and represent the Pac-12 a little bit better. I think they'll do that at home. Going with the Bruins.
The next game we're looking at is Cal Golden Bears are traveling to Seattle to play the Washington Huskies. The Huskies are favored by 13.5 points right now. If you remember last year, Cal upset Washington. I don't know if Cal can do it again. Their offense, eek. I'll go with the Huskies on that one. Scott?
So Pac-12 needs any of these higher profile teams, Oregon, Washington, and Utah, to win and to keep winning big for the sake of the conference. So, I'm gonna go Washington. I actually was pretty impressed. I thought they played pretty well. Eason played well. Even all the things we've kind of heard reports that he struggled in fall camp and barely won that job. But he did look pretty good. I'm gonna go Washington. Cal still literally has no offense. They got a great defense, and I think that's gonna keep them in a lot of games this year. But I'm gonna go Washington.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Washington. I think they're going to be a little upset about what happened last year, and they're going to take care of it.
And then the last game we're looking at for the Pac-12, Stanford traveling down to L.A. to take on the Trojans. It started as a pick'em game. Now it swung to USC. You're only favored by 1 point, 1.5 point, depending on where you're looking. You know, USC, man, losing JT Daniels the way they did to the
That was brutal.
For the whole year. I mean, you hate to see that to anybody, to any of these kids playing college ball. And then knowing that Jack Sears left the program, they're starting a true freshman. That's a lot to ask going against Stanford. They are home, though. I think I'm going to go with the Trees on this one.
Yeah, big game. Big game for USC after the loss of their quarterback. So I'm interested to see how this young Slovis kid, how he shows up against Stanford. I'm not really sure where to go on this because at the moment, Costello, Stanford's quarterback, has not been cleared to play. So if he doesn't play, I probably would lean towards USC on that. But We need our Trees to the north to do us a good favor here and give USC a conference loss early on in the season. So I'm going to be rooting, and I'm going to be. I think the Trees get this done.
Man, I think this would have been a great early season matchup to start out the conference with two pretty good teams and two decent quarterbacks, and now we don't know what we have, but. I think Stanford gets it done at home. I think USC's just
just a mess, especially with a brand new freshman quarterback. So I'll go with Stanford.
And then our last pick, Delta Airlines versus Hurricane Dorian. Ryan, your over under is when you make your flight.
Who you got?
I'm going to go with the under on that.
I'm going to say you're going to spend probably 9 to 12 hours on the tarmac eating a whole bag of peanuts.
All right, as we close out the show, Northern Illinois is traveling to Salt Lake to play the Utes. Utah's a 22.5-point favorite as we're recording this. That's a lot. That spread is humongous. I don't think Utah gets it. I think they'll get close, but I think Utah wins 30-10. Scott?
Oh, man. You have little faith in our. I mean, we're playing a team that's probably a little under you so poo-poo. So I'm going to go on this one 41-6 for the Utes. I think we win big. I think it's a slaughter.
From the Bermuda Triangle, Ryan, who do you got?
I agree. I think the Utes completely dominate this. A little payback from how awful the game was last year. I mean, I know the Utes got the victory. It took a pick six at the end of the, towards the end of the game to get that done. But I think Utes win big. I'm going to go 45-10.
All right, so we all have Utah winning big this week against the Huskies. We'd love to know your prediction of the scores. You can always hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast.
I will just say, so Ryan's joining us kind of a little late. Ryan, make sure to wear red. It is a red out for the game on Saturday, assuming you make it back. And
Good to know, yes. And
practice your rhythmic clapping. I have a feeling it's going to come in handy on Saturday.
Yes, I saw the article. We're going to all get cheering 101 lessons.
Yep, all 400 people that are there at kickoff.
But they're going to blow like 14 cannons before the game starts, so we're all there on time.
All right, so that will do it for this episode. Ryan, good luck with the hurricane coming home. Scott and I have been hanging out at your house eating all your food while you've been gone. But where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, Feather.
And Scott?
Yeah, you can find me in Ryan's house tweeting from UteMan_forever.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram, Utah Man Podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you listen to a podcast, we are there. And at our home at UtahManPodcast.com. And go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes. We'll be till I die, kayai.
They so poo-poo.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.
Thanks for coming on, Mr. Rooney. I wholeheartedly agree. Kind of surprised 9 times. Even Ferris's mom can't believe it.